All right, so this is lesson four, covering chapter 6 and 7. And this is the end of what we call the Sermon on the Mount. So the Sermon on the Mount is not just the Beatitudes, but it's 5, 6, and 7. And this is the end of his whole discourse that he gives at supposedly one time. At least that's how Matthew puts it down. Remembering that what Jesus has been doing from his baptism on has been reliving the history of Israel in order to bring them to a place of life, because they've lived their history completely separate from God. They've tried to do what God told them to do, but they've lived it separately. And so he's gone back and relived for them their history, really all the way from creation on, but specifically going through Israel's high points and reliving them for them with the complete dependent relationship and connection with God, with that mindset of allowing God to rule. So as he's done that to bring them to a place of life, he's also at the same time addressing not just how they've lived and how they need to relive, but he's addressing who they are. And who are they? Who is Israel? Yeah, God's chosen people, right? And so he has to address this, that they are God's chosen people. They were chosen to be blessed in order to be a blessing. And so he's going to have to address that here. He's going to continue to restore them, not just what they've done, but who they are. He's going to restore who they are. And he begins with the disciples, which of course is him reestablishing Israel. Because what we know is that Israel, how did Israel begin as a people? God chose them, and he had 12 sons being born and the beginning of 12 tribes. And so what Jesus does is he chooses, God's chosen, he chooses 12 men to be disciples. And he calls them disciples because disciples are ones who learn with. Remember, this is the God who is with us. So he's choosing to reestablish Israel with 12 disciples who will learn with him. He's not only establishing, okay, let's reestablish, you are Israel, but you're Israel, the one who are supposed to be priests to the rest of the world. This was our whole study of Leviticus, what it really means to be a priest, and that is to call other people to God, back to God, to call them to say, I want to have heaven and earth restored. They're to be the priests. They're the ones who call others to reconciliation with a relationship with God. Which leads them to fulfill the very first mandate that God, that man ever had, and that was to what?
Multiply.
Right, to fill the earth and multiply. That was the purpose of Israel being called to be a priest. They're priests to the nation so that they bring people back into relationship with God, and they multiply God's family once again. So again, it's them joining with God to reestablish what he originally intended them to be priests. So what he does then is he says he calls these 12 disciples and he has them, reminds them again that they're priests. And that's what he does in the Sermon on the Mount. Now I'm just going to take an aside and say to you, Matthew never lists the 12, which is odd, right? Because we just assume. And he actually lets us assume. What he does is he introduces the Sermon on the Mount by saying Jesus went to teach the disciples. He only named four. He named Peter and Andrew and James and John. This is a speculation, but I believe the reason he does that this is, who's his audience? What's his perspective?
Religious.
Religious, right? And the religious of this time are who? Who are they in the social hierarchy? Yeah, they're top, right? And they are known absolutely known. And they are out there. They have the costumes. They have the riches. They have everything. They're known. In fact, the whole point about the Pharisees and the Sadducees and all the high priests, which, first of all, none of them God put in place. He didn't name lots of high priests, by the way. He named one, and yet here in this time we have lots. We have Pharisees and Sadducees, a whole, you know, made-up sect of, you know, hierarchy, religious people. We have all these people who purposely want to be seen in the religious place. So what does Matthew do? He subtly just makes a point. We as disciples, we're background people. Mm-hmm. We're not here to be seen. Mm-hmm. We want Jesus to be seen. And so I believe that's why Matthew, he begins with saying Jesus is teaching the disciples, so we know, oh, he's actually reestablishing Israel. Mm-hmm. But he purposely leaves out his own name and almost all the others to just make this point in a very subtle way. One of the things we don't understand is how Jewish writers always wrote. And they make what we consider very subtle points by leaving out things just as much as putting in things. And so that would have been very common for them to do that. And the fact that he leaves out all the names of the disciples is just this big, we do not need to be known. We do not need to be seen. So the new Israel that Jesus is building, the Israel that really should be more like the disciples rather than the hierarchy priests, religious, that are in that time or now. So then what he does is, if I'm reestablishing and trying to reimagine Israel, I also have to reimagine their role as priests, and then I need to reimagine what they do with their blessing. So he wants, what he does for this last whole section of the Sermon on the Mount is that he reestablishes the blessing he gave them, the Beatitudes, those blessings. He reestablishes that they're not for them to hoard and keep. They're to spill out. Because what's been happening all this time is the Jewish culture has actually taken God's blessings and with them built walls so that they became more and more them and everybody else more and more us, or the other way around. So that they took God's blessings and hoarded them. And they used the nations to build themselves walls so that even under subjection, here they are a whole country that is under Roman rule, and yet they use that to build themselves up. They use all God's blessings to build themselves up so that we see Pharisees, we see Sadducees, we see all this hierarchy in the temple, and we see that everything that goes on in the temple is a big deal, and we're only going to build up the Jews, which is why you'll see Jesus using some of the ways he speaks, kind of like, well, I only came for the Jews. That's a poke. That's a poke right at Israel. That's all you've done with the blessings, is you've just hoarded them and kept them, made sure that they are for no one else. And so what Jesus needs to do with the rest of the Sermon on the Mount is saying, the blessings weren't for you to hoard. The blessings were meant for you to give out so that you multiply and so that my kingdom becomes populated once again, so that Eden becomes a city. And so this is what he does then with the rest of the Sermon on the Mount. He's rebuilding them. He's rebuilding his house, teaching them, bringing them along, learning to live the blessings as a blessing for others, to take in the blessings and allow that overflow to go to other people. And they instead were taking that overflow and kind of, you know, pulling it in. Ooh, it's falling out of that dish. Ooh, I got to get it. Oh, I got to get it and store it up for myself. So that's what Israel was doing, and he needs to reestablish that. That's not what the blessings were for. So does that make sense? Do you see where he's going with this? We need to understand that. If we don't take that context, when we look at some of these things, we will, as we always do, look at these as things that we resolve to do. These are going to be, you know, we have to do this, we have to do this, we can't do this. Rather than look at these as, oh, see, I have to continue in that breathing cycle. I've got to be in a cycle here that I keep on allowing God to empty me so that I'm being filled and then overflowing and being empty. If I'm not in the cycle of being empty, being filled, overflowing, I will start taking in that overflow for myself so that I'm never empty. Mm-hmm. And then I don't need that cycle. And then I don't need to be filled. And pretty soon I'm running on that linear line again where I'm getting better and better and better. And I'm building more and more and more of my own kingdom. Mm-hmm. So do you understand? This is really basic for that, for us to understand what he's doing here. Because as we have, these next two chapters are some of the most commonly taken out of context verses. We take these out and we just say, we know, I mean, you probably know all these verses, but you probably don't know what comes before and what comes after them, each one of them. So we need to understand that that's what he's doing, is teaching them how to allow their blessings to fill them and then overflow and be empty again and fill and overflow. So let's get into Matthew 6. We have, and I'm going to do a lot of the reading of the verses just so we understand some of the terminology here. Beware of practicing your righteousness before men to be noticed by them. Otherwise, you have no reward with your Father who is in heaven. The word righteousness. We've had righteousness a lot, right? It's a common word in Matthew. Mm-hmm. This is not the same word that we've been looking at in Matthew, where righteousness means the right for God to rule, letting God do that. This is a completely different word. Yes, I don't know why they translated this, because it really kind of messes you up with your head. The actual word is eleos, and that should be a word you know. It's mercy. It's the character of mercifulness that you received from getting mercy. So it's beware of practicing the character of mercifulness that you got because God filled you with mercy. Be careful of using that before men to be noticed. And the word to be noticed is actually the word theatrical. What does that sound like? Theater. Yep. Be careful to not use the character of mercifulness that God gave you by filling you with mercy as theater. Be careful not to use it as theater in order for you to get a reward. And we have reward here twice in 1 and 2, two different words here. The reward of the Father is a restoring, a giving out. The reward that they'll get if they use it as theater is actually the wages. So, if you are using that character of mercy as theater, what are the wages of an actor?
Applause.
Applause are the wages of an actor. And so what he's saying here is, don't use that mercifulness that you have because you got mercy. Don't use it for you to get applause. Don't use that and be merciful to others. And I guess I should go with two. So when you give to the poor, same word as righteousness there. They're the exact same word. So when you do your mercy, so when you give out that mercifulness, mm-hmm. don't sound a trumpet. Don't sound a trumpet as the hypocrites. And the word hypocrite is actor. So this is all, it's all taking place in theater. Don't be an actor with it. Don't give it out so that you get something out of it. You are not to use it as a bargaining chip for you to get something. Applause. And what is applause?
Recognition.
Validation, right? You're good. Don't use it for you to get validation that you're good. Don't use it, in other words, as a transaction. How then are we supposed to use it? He says, in secret. Give it out as to the poor. And we can substitute in here the poor in spirit as someone who themselves is poor in spirit. So whether you're poor monetarily wise or poor in spirit, how would you like it if someone uses you and says, hey, you're poor. Give me applause because I'm going to give you a whole bunch of money. Mm-hmm. How do you feel as the one who's poor? What just happened? You got...
It's not mercy.
It's not mercy. It's exactly opposite of mercy, right? You feel shamed. Inadequate. Exactly. You feel complete shame. You just got pointed out as being poor, and you got pointed out as being poor so that someone else gets more. Mm-hmm. And that's what he's saying is, don't use this for you to get something. When you do that, not only do you get something out of it, and not now you don't get the mercy that God wanted you to have be full with, you've also shamed somebody. You've done just the opposite. You've separated somebody from the kingdom mm-hmm. by doing that.
Or from you too.
And from you too as well. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That you, anytime you separate, it's always going to be from you and from God at the same time. Mm-hmm. So do it as one who also is poor in spirit. Knowing, remember, getting the blessings of God came from God breaking you and you knowing, I don't have anything. I have nothing to barter with. And God says, I'm going to fill you. So they're just like you. Anyone who needs mercy is exactly like you. You needed mercy too. Mm-hmm. And so you go to them just as you want someone to go to you, just as you had God come to you. And you give them something that you also got. So that it is a very, I'm coming alongside someone who's just like me. Mm-hmm. And what happens there? You do exactly the opposite. You connect now with somebody rather than separate them. You say, you and I are just alike.
And trumpets, I mean, the visual I get is that's always a gathering of the assembly.
Yep.
That's always used. So it's not just, I'm doing this. This is like, hey, everybody gather around.
Right, right. Come on. Yeah, it's always a call to
right. Come
and see. Yeah. Right. And the interesting thing is, those words there also, they don't just mean to be conspicuous. They mean to be conspicuous just in case somebody's around. That's exactly, so it means just in case somebody might be seeing you, do it. Get these applause. So it's not even necessarily that they have to have an audience. It's they're always aware there could be an audience mm-hmm. somewhere.
Self-conscious.
Completely self-conscious. Completely yeah. like there are probably people looking at me somewhere. Or somebody's going to say something on Facebook.
Well, I mean, that word is like self-conscious.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
How are you focused on
yes. So what is really then the purpose of mercy is to be able to give it out and connect with others. The purpose of being given mercy is to be able to give mercy and connect. It's always a matter of connection. So that God's blessings in the Beatitude and more in the kingdom are always points of connection. They are never given to you as an end. It's not, I made you this cake and here it is, eat it all, and it's done. It's always, first of all, because it's from God, it's always something that's living and growing, and he gives it so that it continues on living and growing and multiplies. But if he gives it to you and you take it, and you hoard it, and you save it, and you say, I'm gonna use this to get something. Oh, I've got extra, so I'm gonna go and barter and use it for something else. It completely misses the purpose of what it is. And what did that sound like? Did the Israelites ever do that before? Yeah, it's a mindset of scarcity, right? It's the manna all over again. And it's exactly what he shows us in this whole next two chapters, is I've given you blessing as something that's supposed to be multiplying out and multiplying in others, never as an end. Never as an end. Mm-hmm. what you do when you give mercy truly, when you truly give it out, when it overflows and it just isn't even almost in your ballpark, it just overflows from you, you begin to validate people when they're completely naked and empty, so that you do exactly what God did for you in validating that they're okay just as they are. So we go from that to prayer. And what we notice in chapter 6 is the giving out of mercy, the prayer, and the fasting all uses the same setting. It's all theater. It's all actors, hypocrites. So all of these things go under the exact same heading. Prayer, he says. So what's prayer? It's a privilege of conversation with the Almighty. It's that privilege that we get to connect with God. And he says, don't use it as an actor does. Don't use it so that you'll get something out of it. Don't use it so that others will think of you as good and holy. Or don't use it also as a transaction to get God to listen to you. I'll make you understand that in a second. How is it that we can use prayer to get others to think that we're good, that we're holy? How would we do that?
In a group, maybe.
And how in a group would we do that?
So if someone's more comfortable with it, perhaps, you know, some people aren't comfortable out loud in group settings. So maybe they would just
Okay.
Okay. In
their heart. Right. We don't know that, right?
In a group, it's kind of like giving in front of others.
Okay.
Right? Praying in front of others. Mm-hmm. We're called to go to our closet and pray. Mm-hmm. Go, you know, alone and pray.
Okay.
I think, too, sometimes if people know that you pray, or I might say, oh, well, I'll pray for you, then they kind of become and think you're special because you have this connection. And I'm like, well, you could have it, too. You know, so it's kind of like special. I got this one-on-one going, you know, which is not really the way of one of these things.
Right. Okay. So this is really subtle, right?
Yeah.
It's very subtle because if someone has something that happens in their life and we say, "Oh, I'll pray for you," there is the absolute ability for us to be sincere. I want to pray for you. I just want to pray for you. I want to be your servant here. Mm. But there's also part of us that becomes a, oh, I'll pray for you. I'll pray for you. I want you to know that I pray about everything. Oh, and I pray right away about, and I'm not going to forget that I pray for you. There is this subtleness, and there isn't any one of us that can tell what's happening in the other person, right? Mm-hmm. This is about our heart. Mm-hmm. Where is our heart when we say we'll pray for someone? Now, we don't do a lot of standing up and praying like they would have done, mm-hmm. But our ways are much more subtle about that. So it's, again, in this matter of the heart. Why do I tell someone that I'm praying for them?
Well, you could pray, they want them to know that I care about them.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it could be, like,
to sound religious,
separation, yeah. Too. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You can pray in theys, you know?
Yeah, right.
Like, you can pray
right.
In, like, their situation.
Yes.
And what they
yes.
are going through, which is all, like, language of separating yourself
right.
from the prayer. You
right.
know what I mean?
Right, exactly.
Not that it's always like that.
No, and we've got to be really careful. I'm not going to judge you how you're doing it, but I will judge myself and say, yeah, there are probably times that I even disillusion myself in thinking, well, I just want to pray for them. Yeah, but why does it come out of my mouth all the time? Why can't I just pray without having to say, I'm going to pray for you?
But I don't know, because I do think there is a, like, what if nobody ever said that?
No.
Then the person feels like, I have
right.
something and I need help,
right.
and I think that somebody praying for me would make a difference. But I don't think anybody's praying for me because nobody will ever say that.
Right. So it's not about the words, right? It's not about what you say. It's about why are you saying what you're saying? Or why are you praying the way you're praying?
And
isn't intercessory prayer a gift?
Absolutely is a gift, yes. And it's even a gift and commanded that we pray together. So do you understand that the things that he's talking about become very subtle for us, so that it is a matter of us going to God and saying, you know, I'm empty here. I can't pray on my own. And if I am praying on my own, it's not really praying. Mm-hmm. But I need to know what my heart is about this. So,
it's covenant again, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the only way to pray well is with God.
Right.
And the covenant of breaking open of the pieces and having your heart open.
Right.
And making sure your intention.
Right, exactly.
I'm having a hard time because I keep thinking if I say that to somebody, I'd like to think that I'm sincere.
Yes, we would all would, don't
now,
we? Yes.
But sitting here thinking, I think when you said intention,
mm-hmm.
like it's for, like judging yourself,
mm-hmm.
because I have a friend that is in a terrible situation mm-hmm. as far as what I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And my prayer has been that she will stay away from the sick husband that she has.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my selfishness mm-hmm. that I think mm-hmm. what's best for her.
Yes.
Life.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How about sometimes I pray for someone as a way to not have to be with them, so that maybe if they, I just tell them I'm praying for them, then I don't have to actually walk through that horrible situation.
Yeah.
I can just
right.
say, I'm praying for you.
Right.
I'm praying for you. And then
right.
it's this way of like not being with,
right.
in a way. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So the subtleness here, and really what Jesus is trying to get at is your prayer in any way or form getting something for yourself? Okay, so are you getting either accolades, applause, or are you getting what avoidance of having to be with, or are you getting, you know, God, this is the good thing to do? Are you getting to tell what the good thing is? Are you getting your will done, or trying to? So what he keeps saying is, these are blessings I'm giving you. I'm giving you mercy to be able to let it flow to others. I'm giving you prayer. I'm giving you conversation and access to me so that others also can be blessed. This is not for you to get your desires met. Either your will be done or you avoiding having to do something or be with people or applause.
Thought well of.
Without what?
Thought well of.
Without, yes, to be thought well of. The other side of it, as he talks about prayer, he talks about don't use meaningless repetition. We've talked about this before, and I love when people say, "Oh, see, that means that we shouldn't say like these people that they just say the Lord's Prayer over and over again." Mm-hmm. Well, if that's what it meant, he wouldn't have the Lord's Prayer
yeah.
here. What it means here is the pagan way to pray, and I didn't pull this up, but I had a prayer that they would pray. The pagan way to pray is to get God's attention, they had to butter him up. So they had to say, "Oh God, you who love my feet and who are just shining like the stars and the ones who made the earth and oh you," and they would use words after words
mm-hmm.
to elevate God in this, "God, you are just so great." Okay,
mm-hmm.
What does this sound like? Anybody do this to you? Do your kids ever do this to you?
Yeah.
"Oh, Mom, you're such a good cook. Oh, I just love the cakes you make and everything. Oh, would you make me cupcakes tonight?" That's what it means by meaningless repetition, how the Gentiles pray. It's this butter up God so he'll hear you. Using prayer, using extraordinary words so that he will hear you and answer you. Does that make sense?
There's a, I can't think of the acronym I learned in a Bible study. Is it SOAP? No, and it's a way to pray.
Or
you.
Oh,
yes.
Acts.
Acts.
Mm-hmm.
Acts. What is it?
Adoration.
Wait, one person?
I didn't
get any of that.
Adoration.
Adoration.
Confession.
Mm-hmm.
Thanksgiving. Supplication.
So is that?
I'm completely intimidated by prayer.
Okay.
For all of this reason, like there's a way
yes.
to do it, there's a way not
exactly.
to do it.
Yes.
Right.
Right. Exactly.
It's your heart again, though. It's why are you doing it?
Well,
if
right.
you really are truly adoring him, What's wrong with telling him he's great and awesome? And
why are you telling him he's great?
Right. So if you really...
Yes. So what did I just say? What is God getting at? What is Jesus getting here? What's your intention? Is your intention to get something out of it? If you go to prayer with your intention being to get something out of it, either because of the way you've done it or because you've done it, then that's not taking the gift as it was given. That's taking it and hoarding it for yourself. Do you understand that? How often do you pray in order to get something?
Pretty often.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Or you mess something up and you ask God to fix it.
Yeah. He asks us to come with our needs and our desires, right? But in the Sermon on the Mount, what Jesus is doing is he is reworking our desires for us and reworking our needs so that he makes our desires and he makes our needs. So that prayer is this absolute, wow, I get to converse with the Almighty Creator who created me and who validated me before I did anything. This is this privilege that we get to converse with him and talk with him. I don't come to him going, I know if I come to him and if I come to him this way, I'll get this. So it's both sides. I don't pray for other people so that I get applause. I also don't pray to God so that I get applause. So that prayer shouldn't be intimidating, but it becomes intimidating because we've made all of these. It is literally what Matthew puts out here, and Luke even more simply, is it's simply just tell him, man, I know it's you where everything comes from. I completely depend on that. So we'll quickly go through the prayer just this. Absolutely. That's exactly what it is. It is coming under. It is absolutely saying a couple things. Our Father who is in heaven, two things right there. First and foremost, what I know and understand is that it's our Father. It's all of us. It is not, he's my Father because I believed and I did right and I said the prayer. It's not my Father. It's our Father. He has chosen to be the Father of all of us. It's our Father. So I first come to him realizing it's not me and him who have this privilege. It's like all of us. So it, right away it gets away from that us and them kind of thing. And the second thing we know is that we just come to him as Father. And Father in here is what no matter what kind of father you had growing up, Father for Matthew is this term of someone who loves you unconditionally and provides for you with abundance. And so we come to him just knowing he's all of our Father. And it makes a difference when you pray our Father rather than my Father. I don't think any of us ever says my Father, but I think we do often come thinking, you know, one of you said, you know, I have a special connection with him. Well, actually, he said, you know, he's everyone's Father.
Is the word Father that Jesus uses later on when he says to the Sadducees, your Father? Because he does say,
yes,
that's your Father.
Right.
So
you're right.
There's two fathers in
the Yep,
Bible.
You're right. You're right. I'll have
is
to look
it
up.
Same Father? I mean...
Probably, knowing that they think that they're getting provision and love from their Father, which is why they follow him, right?
Is it the word Abba there? This
is not, I don't think this is Abba. I have to look. What is it? Do you know?
I'll look.
Yeah, look it up. And I'm only going to point out a couple things because we have done this prayer a couple times. I come to him. So what's the purpose then of prayer? Purpose, first and foremost, is that I recognize that God is our Father, that he's the loving provider of everyone. And I come with claiming full dependence on him. Prayer is always for me, first and foremost, to say, you are our Father, and you are the source of everything. You are the only place that good can be done from. You're the only one who provides the good. You're the only one who provides daily for me. And it is you that gives me the ability to give out any good. That's what we find in that prayer there. So the purpose of prayer is always to recognize our dependence on God, so that we're all in the same boat together. It really helps us as we go to others, that this is your Father and my Father. Lynn, you said, you know, it's not just me that has a connection. You have that connection too. You can pray too. That's that whole, like, going to that, so that we don't say, I'll pray for you. You know, that kind of, I'll pray for you. You know, kind of pat on the head, you know.
But the distinction was that the religious people didn't have a connection.
Correct.
They didn't know God, and that's why Jesus came.
Okay,
the real Father.
Right. They rejected. It wasn't that the Father wasn't there. And this is why we have to, in all of Matthew, always go back to that picture of the kingdom has always been there, and he's always been Father there, but they're rejecting that. So it's not like the Father is only there going, only people come to me. It's, I am their Father. And as we get toward the end, as we get toward the crucifixion and resurrection, it'll be more apparent for you of why it's so bad at the end, because there's a rejection of what is true rather than they didn't come. And subtle difference now, but I think it'll be a bigger difference when we get there.
But it's interesting what you're saying, Carol, because, like, you're right that if Yahweh, like, they wouldn't even say the name out loud.
Right, right.
They wouldn't even say it out loud, and then he gives them
yes.
the most familiar name
yes.
of all.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that concept.
Exactly.
And they had to change their mind about
yes.
who God
right.
was.
Right.
Because they had the father figures of their leaders.
Right.
Who were models of not Yahweh.
Right, exactly.
But he said, you're the father of the devil.
Right, exactly.
So that was their idea that God the Father was rule-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
He had to
right.
do all these things, go over hoops, couldn't have a conversation with God, because
mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. you had to be a certain way. And Jesus is saying, no, I'm the reflection of the Father. If you know me, you can converse with me. Therefore, you know the real Father.
Right.
So they did have to have a change of mind.
Right.
And then he gave it.
And so, and you said exactly that. Their picture
mm-hmm.
was what they were looking at.
Mm-hmm.
And that's...
As is ours.
And that's what I mean is...
Yeah.
Right, exactly. We have... And this is what he's trying to do. He's trying to revitalize what's
mm-hmm.
true as opposed to our picture. The pictures that we're carrying around in those cruise ships. Because I hope in the cruise ship you also had God. Because you do. You do put God in your own little cruise ships and kind of, you know, formulate him how he is. So that when he's in that cruise ship of yours, in that little kingdom of yours, how you've decided he's like, when you come to prayer, assuming I'm coming so I get something, that means you have him in that kingdom there. You have him in that little cruise ship there. Because you have a picture of him being somebody who's just going to give you stuff if you come to him.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do that, we'll look at a lot of the verses in Matthew as very different than what they really are.
Is that possible? I mean, aren't we too human to...
What's the end of our verse?
Mm-hmm.
With God, all things are possible. It's with, you're right, Jamie, with man, with me, by myself,
right.
in my own cruise ship, absolutely not. It's not possible.
I mean, you know, even if you were thinking, I'm doing this so I could get a connection with God,
uh-huh.
then there's still, right?
Yeah, right, exactly, exactly.
Right.
So right.
He knows that we don't know how to pray.
Yep.
That's why he gave
yep.
an example.
Exactly. Yep.
Even if we came with the wrong motive,
mm-hmm. yep.
I think he still loves as a dad would.
Yep.
His child is coming.
Yep. Yep. And what does he do? He wants to make sure that he's revitalizing those motives to good motives, right? Revitalizing our desire for applause, and this is exactly the point of these three sections. He's changing our desire for applause for desire for connection.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's doing in that. He's doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jesus is teaching the disciples, this is what I'm doing here so that you can't, like you said, you can't do it, but I'm doing that. Let me do that. Let me change your desires. Let me be the one who decides what a desire really is. rather than you.
It comes back to submission and emptying yourself, because
right.
it has to be Jesus working us
yes.
to even have
right.
intention.
Right.
You know, we can't even muster up.
Right, exactly. Which is why Sydney says, yeah. what's prayer really? It's submission. It's I'm empty.
Yeah.
You know, I can't even desire the right thing. Mm-hmm. Would you give me the desire? Mm-hmm. And that's what he's doing here
but
with that.
I look at it too now that I'm a grandma. And I've made all my mistakes with my kids. But if a child comes to a good daddy, and even if their motives are, I want, there's something in the heart
yes.
of a mother and a father that does want to bless.
Yep.
Even if their motives
yep.
are. So I guess for me, prayer has always been a conversation with a really good dad
yep.
who really wants to listen and hear my heart.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't. And sometimes it is to get something.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I need it. And
mm-hmm.
sometimes it says, no, I'm not going to give you
mm-hmm.
it. So I feel
and
like even in this,
yep.
we make it like stifling. It's a conversation that it can be continual.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be religious.
Yeah. And so in that conversation, you even said it, in that conversation of a dad who wants to give, sometimes he says no, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What is that no? It's a breaking down of my desire for his desire.
Well, it's because I know he's good.
Yeah.
So our life here is just learning the goodness
yep.
of God.
Yep.
So when he says no, it's not because he's
right. Right, exactly.
Because he has something good.
Exactly. But the picture was, if he says no, then I'm doing something wrong.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Well, that's because we've been listening to the wrong father.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And we actually will get into that at the end.
Yeah.
Let's go on to fasting. So we come to fasting the same way is in this theater idea. How are we not to fast? We're not to fast in a way that gets others to see that I'm holy, that I am... to say, boy, you're really good. And I hope this really hits at heart because we're going through fasting, right? We've fasted from food and now we're fasting from clothing.
Yeah, I totally bragged about that too.
Okay, and that's going to actually be one of my questions.
It's either brag or explain.
Well, yeah.
But it's
so,
in a way of like, hey, you should try it too. Like,
yeah, yeah. So remember what these are? All of these, the mercy,
totally
the prayer, and the fasting are the gifts of the Beatitudes. Emptiness is a gift that God gives us, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because only in emptiness do we want to be filled and are ready to be filled,
mm-hmm.
right? So this is a gift. So we don't use it. So how many of you have gotten a gift and then use it? Oh, as soon as I said that, I thought, oh my gosh, I just did this week. How many of you gotten a gift and then used it for barter to get something else instead?
I got a black sweater. I already have 3 black
uh-huh.
sweaters, so I better take it back and get a purple one.
Or you mean
give
a gift
to get?
Oh.
Is that what you mean?
Whatever. Have you ever used the gift to get what you really wanted rather than accepted the gift as it was?
Hi.
Yeah. Yeah, so there are some people who are really good gift givers but really bad gift receivers because it wasn't what they really wanted. I have people in my family that do that, that you give them a gift and they're like, that's not what I wanted. And they take it back. And they get exactly what they wanted. Or they're mad because they didn't get exactly what they wanted.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I wanted a 12 cup, I only got a
9 cup. Okay.
Yeah, but if it's a karaoke machine, give me a break. That one.
I don't care if it comes back, but I get my feelings hurt by certain people that should know what I like.
Oh, see, this is exactly it. We do this to God. God, you should know what I like. You should know that this is really what I desire. I really desire applause this way. And what he's trying to do is saying, see, I'm trying to mold your desires. Because the applause I want to give you are applause in the kingdom, which are hidden and secret, not out loud. The desires I want to give you are not desires that are public, but you want public desires. So let me ask you this about fasting. for the fasting we've done in our excursions. How have you used the fasting? It was a gift. It was an invitation, and it was a gift. Have you felt like it was a gift? Did you feel like abstaining from everything but seven foods in the last month was a gift? Do you feel like... Okay. Okay. Did you feel like... So most of you just started this week. Some of us started the week before on clothing. Do you feel this is a gift? Robin thought it was a gift. She doesn't have to think anything at all, right? This is great. Have you thought about it as a gift? Have you, or have you used it kind of as a badge of pride? I'm only eating seven foods this month. Wow, really? Yeah, only seven foods. Only seven. Only seven foods. The question is, have you used it as a badge of honor, as a badge of pride? Have you complained?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mostly complain about you. Like,
yeah.
How does she expect us to do this? I can barely get through my stuff.
Uh-huh. And what does it say? How are you not to fast? With a gloomy face?
Yeah.
With a, oh, this is awful. I'm going to do it, but this is just awful. Oh.
You need red meat?
Yeah. Yeah. How are we to fast? We anoint our head, which means we act as priests. I'm giving out. I'm using this not for myself, not to show that I'm great, and not to complain about, oh, it's so hard. And when I complain, what I really do is say, oh, I'm so good because I do such a hard thing.
Separation.
Absolutely. So we do that. And believe me, I'm pretty good at keeping my mouth shut on certain things. But to tell, the last 5 days, I've complained in my head a million times. Like, I'm not doing this clothing thing. I'm not doing it.
Are those part of your...
Yes, these are part of my things. But I'm like...
She has to today.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I wouldn't pick that.
But I have said, I'm not doing this. I don't have to do this. I don't have to do this. I don't want to do that mini excursion. No, I don't want to do it. I have really complained about that in my heart. Yeah. And yet God says, I'm giving you a gift. And the more I complain about it, the more of a gift it actually is. Because it means that's a place that you really need separation from something you've connected yourself with that isn't good. So, I knew coming up to this was going to be a problem. I avoided even thinking about it because I didn't want to do it. I know this is a problem for me. So, the complaining is this red flag of, wow, you don't see this as a gift. This is a gift, and it's a big gift for you because you're complaining. So, you can kind of know. That it is.
It's hard because it's not in secret.
Ah.
None of us can do it in secret.
Okay.
Because we have to discuss what we're doing. And maybe you don't want to discuss what you're doing, but we're... So it's kind of hard.
Okay. So secret means... Doesn't necessarily mean that no one sees it. It means you don't go, look what I'm doing.
That's right.
Look what I'm doing. It means I'm doing it because somebody might be looking. When we do it here, we do it as a body that says, we're all going to do this. Let's hold each other up. So you see that difference? So the secret is I'm doing it without trying to get accolades from it. I'm doing it without going, look at me. Look, I've worn this 5 times in a row. Look at this. It's not that.
Well, I guess because I felt like what the heart of it is.
Mm-hmm.
So if God asks me to fast or to pray, I don't go around telling people.
Mm-hmm.
So
So it is strode, right? And who made it a rule for you, Carol?
You did.
Really? Is that true?
No.
Is that true?
I'm just saying that's what we're doing. So when God says, when I'm in a quiet place,
it was an invitation.
With the
No.
It was an invitation, and I'm just being honest.
I know. It feels like a rule, but it felt like a rule from your side.
Yeah.
But what, isn't that what we do with God? We say, well, God does have all these rules. And God says, you know what? I don't. But you keep saying I do.
Mm-hmm. Well, when he's asked me in the quiet place to do something,
mm-hmm.
that doesn't feel like a rule to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I love him. I don't do it out of duty. So it's just, I'm just being honest. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of hard because we're talking about something that he said is between you and him.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Well, the truth is, I can't accept all of God's invitations right now.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, there is no way I could do everything he's inviting me to.
Yep.
You know? And there is a level of, like, I mean, with the food thing last month, I was like, yeah, we're going on vacation, we got this, blah, blah. And besides all that, I knew I did not have the space in my time mm-hmm. to be broken open before God in a way that I could actually receive it as mm-hmm. an invitation. And that it would become like a rule, and I would get so frustrated, it would cause death. In my, like, my family would, everybody would suffer. Do you know what I mean? And, like, I think it's okay to say the truth is, I can't accept every invitation. What invitation is the Holy Spirit calling mm-hmm. me to that I can?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's this one. Maybe it's another one, you know? Because there's no way to...
Yeah. And he does call us. He does invite us in community. So to say it's all... And here, this is a fallacy. And I'm going to break this right now, and I know some of you are not going to like this. It is a fallacy to think that my relationship with God is only my relationship with God. We have, American Christianity has said, it's between me and him. Scripture never says that.
Yeah.
Scripture is about, it's a Trinitarian relationship.
Mm-hmm.
If you try to make it only, what would be a double relationship? Not Trinitarian.
In a lateral, I don't know.
It's not what God has intended. So I understand what you're saying, Carol, but I'm challenging you as I'm challenging all of us, including myself. No, I don't like it. I don't like people to say, well, we should all do this.
I didn't say that. I didn't say that I didn't like it. It felt like a rule.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. Is
I didn't say I didn't like it, but it felt
like a rule. But it felt like a rule from your heart, not from our hearts, not from my heart. In fact, I have said this before I even did this. I find it funny that when I say, okay, let's do this, nobody says, no, I'm not going to do that.
Pass it.
Pass it.
She's not
going to
wait.
But they don't have a conversation with me. It's either I'm just going to, in my heart, say, forget it. I'm not doing that. There's no conversation. See, there's no, it's, we struggle with community as a conversation, which is why we get some of these things and why we actually struggle with these without saying we struggle with them. We don't ever say we struggle with some of these. We're going to get to judging and we're going, yeah, I don't want to struggle with that.
I like what you said last week about pray about it this week and see what God wants to teach you on this particular area.
Yeah.
You know, and so maybe for you it's not.
Right. And Carol did. She used it differently, which was perfect.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that it wasn't. What I'm saying is we do this to God all the time and we do it to each other. God didn't make a rule for you to even fast. I'm not making you a rule. I've invited you and I've asked you to go to God before it. But together as community, we are supposed to be learning together. And this is a way that God had showed me we could learn together. And I actually think we do a much better job of learning when we're doing it together than on our own. Because on our own, we can kind of talk ourselves in and out of things.
Mm-hmm.
And we can kind of get, you know, around things. But in community, which is exactly what Jesus is trying to do here with the Sermon on the Mount, and you're going to see this at the end, is he's trying to develop community here rather than it's just you and God. It's just you and God, whatever. Which is really what we've been taught. We've really been taught. American Christianity is very different than Middle Eastern Christianity. Very different.
And there's joy in the community, too. Like, yes. My husband and I would text each other our plate at lunch. You know,
yeah.
Yeah, just like, look at, you know, toast with smashed blueberries or whatever. You know, and it kind of
It does. So all that to say, and I'm glad that you can be honest with that, because I think more than you struggle with that. I mean, I struggle with it. I'm struggling with myself making this clothing thing a rule. I'm struggling with myself. And I'm saying, it's got to be this. And then I'm going, yeah, well, what about this? What about this? And I can see, wow, Jill, you think this is a rule. What does God want you to get out of this? Does he want you to get anything out of it? Does he want you to even do it? I better be asking that question. So definitely things that we need to be.
It's nice that it's in the wintertime, so we don't have to go outside. And I wear my seven things. I mean, I wear only seven every day. But that doesn't count going outside.
Layers.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Okay.
About it. Shoes, socks, bra, panties. Dad, pants, and shoes.
That's seven.
I'm not rule.
Yeah, there you go.
Remembering that the purpose of fasting is for us to be empty of all the things we've been filling ourselves with so that God can fill us. So that we're poor in spirit, we find ourselves poor in spirit, and then allow God to fill us. It's to discover where we're unhealthily connected and to rediscover that connection with God is where life is. It's why he says, man cannot live by bread alone, because that's not the biggest need. That is not. In fact, God allowed his people, his very people, to be hungry and to be thirsty. And not just to be a little hungry, not to, like, I didn't have a snack at 12 o'clock. But, like, I haven't eaten for days. And God said that was good. Mm-hmm. And we say, well, if I don't have food today, it's not good. And God says, could you let me mold your desires and mold your needs? Because when I mold your desires and your needs, you will be filled with everything you need, and then some, and overflowing.
So I found it to be, I don't really have to submit to many things in my life. I don't feel like, so for me it's been just I feel like, to me, I'm explaining it to myself as an experiment in submission.
Ah, yes, yes.
Well, do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Exercising restraint.
Just an yeah.
Exercise is just never right. In submission and restraint, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I don't really have to do that in many.
Yeah. Yep, I think that's good. Let's go on just to sum up those first three is I'm always looking for validation. My desire is validation. So what I do then is I begin to use his gifts as barter pieces to get validation rather than allowing them to flow. Anybody that you can think of in the Bible that actually used his gifts for something they wanted rather than what it was meant to?
Esau.
Well, let's go even farther back than that.
I didn't pick the right one.
that's good. And the reason I say this, Jane, is because we've talked about this before. Yeah. We've done this. Go back to Genesis, chapter 3, Adam and Eve. What did they use for their own means that God didn't mean for that? The leaves to cover themselves. Right? Did God ever intend leaves to be clothes? No. But their desire was to cover up. Get what they wanted. They used God's blessing, not for a blessing, right? Not to shade everybody, but to hide themselves. This is what he's saying is, we so often take God's blessing, the blessings of the Beatitudes, the blessings of being poor, the blessings of having mercy, and we take them for ourselves, and then we use them like, oh, I have mercy. Well, I'm going to be merciful here so people see that I'm good. And let me say this to you. Every one of these things is super subtle for us so that we can sit here and say, you know, I never try to be merciful to someone for applause. But I can assure you, you've done it. We've all done it. If we hadn't all done it, Jesus would not use it in the Sermon on the Mount. We've all been there. He's just trying to reveal to us how we take God's blessings in and then try to use them as barter okay, I'm going to get applause here. I'm going to get validation here. I'm going to say, I want to know that I'm good here. And I want to decide what is validation for me. I decide that validation for me is very public. I decide that validation is makes me stand out. I say validation separates me from the common. And because of that, I will look for it from others rather than God. Mm-hmm. Because then I can see the separation. Then I can have. Then it can be public. Then it can make me stand out. When I do that, when I use others to get my validation, I necessarily separate them and put them lower. And so I've done exactly opposite what mercy is supposed to do, which is to connect. Jesus says that our desires are defined and found in the Father. He already has committed to being your Father when you were empty, without any means to barter with him. The adoption was one-sided. Your validation has already been given in that you are an heir of the kingdom. Now, you might want to reject that heir, being heir, but he's already given it to you. And that's your validation. It says you're good, and you got it because you were related, not because you did something. He is restoring my desire for validation with a godly desire for connection, because he's already validated me. And when I forget that, when I'm not empty and allowing him to fill me, I forget that he's validating me, and I start going outside. So I want you to think about this. Have you ever used your mercy, prayer, or fasting for validation?
This week? Every day?
Yeah. I hope we're going to get to this exercise. I want you to remember that, because eventually I'm going to have you just put on there those words that you know you've used that for validation. In fact, I'll just pass these on, because you're just going to keep on putting things down there. So put the word mercy, prayer, or fasting if you know that you have used those ever for validation in some way. Let's go on to 19. We talk about storing up treasures. So we're not supposed to use our blessings in that first section as theater in order for us to get applause. We're also not supposed to use our blessings, the blessings of the Beatitudes, the blessings that God gives us in providing and filling us up, as a safety net. So we get to the treasure, don't store your treasure. We're not to use what he gives us in the Beatitudes and beyond as something to store up just in case, so that we can make sure to meet our own needs. The word store there, to store up your treasure, and then treasure, they're actually the same base word, and the word is thesaurus. You ever hear that word before? Mm-hmm. It's an English word. We use it. What is a thesaurus? That mean what?
The same.
Yeah, exactly. It's a mass of words that all mean the same thing. You could have said it with one word, but we've got a book. How else could I say it? How else could I get it? How else? How else? How else? So to store up treasure is to amass reserves, amass a lot of duplicates.
Exactly.
I mean, I would be embarrassed, and probably at some point God will say, okay, so one of your exercises is everyone's going to go up to your closet and look. I would be horrified. So when I remember as a newlywed seeing my mother-in-law's closet. She lived in a house about this size, and it was only her and her husband. Her husband had a small closet, probably smaller than the one there in the hall, and it was downstairs. She had massive closets in all the rooms. They were filled with all her clothes. She had one huge closet that was only slacks, and they were all the exact same slack, just in different colors. Mm-hmm. And I would be like, oh, well, now I go look at my closet. I have two closets. And I feel like one of them is all slacks and dresses, and one of them is all shirts. Oh, my goodness.
You know, I was in something somewhere where someone said, think of your five best friends, and then how many of those women have you seen their closets?
Uh-huh.
So it was
kind of like, right. Those are the...
Something vulnerable.
Yes, very, very vulnerable. Heather's probably seen a lot of them. But
Jill, I've always wondered, Joseph was praised for storing up grains.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good sign. In the Bible, that is a good thing of storage. So I understand there's a different reason.
And why did he store them up?
Under God's direction.
Yes, under God's direction for others. That's right. Right, not for himself.
Yeah. Stores in the temple, too.
Yeah, well, that's not what they were for. we're not going to talk about the temple today. How are we not to use our treasures, our reserves, and that is we're not to store them up for a rainy day for ourselves.
Hoarding.
To not consider storing up just in case we need it. And I will be vulnerable with these if we get to the exercise. Now, it is any amassing of anything that cannot be used in the kingdom. So that means not just physical clothes or food or houses or things that go in the houses, but it also means time, status, accolades,
abilities,
all of this is not supposed to be amassed to sit there waiting for a need that might arise at some future point. So I'm adamant about saying that because I think we're awful at just amassing material stuff. But I think we amass the other stuff as well. So we need to understand that it's broader than just that.
Wait, can you give an example?
Of amassing?
Of things that are not, you said like things like time and mm-hmm. You know, non-material things, but can you give some example of,
So if I amass, if I amass a lot of time to use for myself, just in case. I'm gonna. Oh, somebody comes in the door and they want to talk. And I'll say, you know what? I got 5 minutes. Sit down. We'll talk. Because I want to amass the time in my day so I can, in case I might need more time. So, and I will tell you this. I do this all the time. My study day is Monday. I keep that. But I have Tuesday on reserve, mm-hmm. just in case. And if someone asks me to do something, I'm like, well, okay, a short time. Because I don't know if I might need that Tuesday. And you know what? You know what happens? I end up having to need that Tuesday
because
I set it aside. And so God says, well, you're going to need it now. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yeah. So I amass time. I amass all sorts of things just in case I need it so that I can fulfill my need.
Manage.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
And have you ever found, Jill, how he redeems your time if you bless somebody else?
Absolutely.
Giving it to them,
oh, my gosh.
Watch what God
yes.
does.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I do that. And you would think after 25 years of teaching, you know, you would get like, you know what? You know, I don't have to reserve this. I can just do whatever. Because then all of a sudden, like, the lesson just comes and you think, wow. Wow. That, like, are you sure, God? Yeah, that's it. Really?
So does it taste like quail?
Yeah. It does. Yeah. How are we supposed to use... He says, build, store them up. What does he say? Oh, store up yourself treasures in heaven. What does he mean there, to store up and to amass? He means that as you allow what you have been given, whether it's material goods or time or talents or abilities, when you allow that to overflow, that gets stored up for you. because those are the things that are used in the kingdom. Let me put it this way. When I do that, what I'm giving out then is connection for other people. What I'm giving out is belonging for other people, is mercy for other people. Those things actually survive in the kingdom. Belonging, connectedness, mercy, those actually survive in the kingdom. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
401k.
Yeah, right.
I feel like maybe like a definition would be helpful here of like kingdom of heaven too. Like, because even like the verse in the beginning and like the way we're talking about treasures, I think we're looking at it very diametrically.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like store, what does it mean to store our time up for heaven? What does it mean to store our stuff up for heaven? And I don't know, I'm just thinking about that definition of like the kingdom of heaven is the effective rule and reign of God.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So therefore, like thinking of storing up your time or your gifts for heaven actually just means, are my gifts, are my time, are my things under the effective rule and reign of God?
Right.
That's
right.
All it's really saying. Not
right.
Like, you know.
Yeah, you're not taking your talents. You're allowing your talents to overflow so that people get connected. And that connectedness.
But always under the rule and reign of God.
Right,
right,
right, exactly. But what is the rule of God? That everybody continue, that unity come, that he restore unity. That's the kingdom.
Justice.
Yes, yes.
I was thinking, like, what is God's treasure? Well, he gave his only treasure, his greatest treasure, Jesus, to people.
Yep.
So I felt like that's treasure, people.
Right. Exactly. And what? And that's exactly the picture. Yes. So he used what he had most. He let it overflow. And that in that overflowing, it connected people to him, which is exactly what it did. Which really, the purpose of treasures is to heal the heart, to make you whole and others whole. That's the purpose. That's why it says that where your treasure is, your heart will be. And does your heart get healed by amassing, whether it be material good or your time, or you know, being this little like Ebenezer, like, you know, I'm gonna keep all this. Does that fulfill your heart and make your heart whole? No, it actually shrinks your heart, makes it hard. But when I allow it to overflow, and it connects other people, my heart becomes healed in those ways. It becomes whole. I become who God intended me to be, somebody who is connected with people and connected with the kingdom rather than this kingdom here, rather than building my own kingdom. Yeah.
Purpose of treasure is wholeness.
Exactly. All right, so the second point under this one is the eye is the lamp of the body. But if your eye is bad, that word bad there means... looking two different ways. So cross-eyed. So.
Like, I'm God and money.
Yes, exactly. So unfocused. So if I'm looking at, trying to look at two different things at once, mm-hmm. neither is clear, right? I can't see both at the same time clearly. I can only look at one thing at a time clearly. So if I'm looking at what I need, because I haven't gotten my desires met, so now my desires are becoming a need, and I'm looking at my needs, but I'm also looking at God, I'm going to have fuzzy vision on both. This is what it means by if your light is darkness. It means you've got light coming in, but both sides are clouded because I cannot look both ways. I mean, if you try to look both ways, it actually makes me dizzy, actually. It unfocuses that light that you get, and so things are fuzzy on both sides. How then, what are we supposed to do with our eyes? We're supposed to look only in one place, and the only thing that is true. Because when we look at our needs are not true, because I've decided what my need is. So it's not even a true need. Because if I'm looking, what's my true need? What really is my true need? God, right? Well, if I'm looking at my true need, then I am looking only in one place. But I'm looking at the needs that I've decided are needs. and then trying to look at God as well, and it becomes very blurry. I'm supposed to use my eyes to discover where God is, to discover what God is doing, to discover God's kingdom, where he's working, how he's filling me, how he's feeding me with himself, how he's clothing me with himself. So we notice that that we're going to talk about thought about provisions, and that all of these flow in one to another. The eye, remember, he says here, the eye is the lamp. Where else have we heard lamp in Matthew? Yeah, where he says, yeah. No, you don't hide it under a bushel, because the lamp is where the light comes from. And what are we supposed to be doing with our light? We're letting it shine. We're letting it be seen by other people. We're letting, what is that light? That light is that reflection. He is first the light, and so our light is the reflection of looking at him. So if my eye is the reflection of looking at him, where I'm looking reflects him, and I'm looking at my needs. And somebody knows me by saying, she always needs things. Oh, I need that dress today. I need that piece of chocolate cake today. I need this. What am I reflecting? I'm reflecting that I am living in a place of scarcity, mm-hmm. that God isn't supplying for me, and that I'm going to have to go and get it myself. And that's what I'm reflecting as being in the kingdom. Does that make sense? It's, again, this real subtle, and it says you are the light. You can't stop being the light. But you have this cloudiness in you, and you keep looking at these things and reflecting that to other people. And so the kingdom looks a lot like our own little kingdoms. And then the body looks a lot like what's in this world already. And we do the exact same things and look at the same things and scrounge for the same things and try to get our needs met in the same ways. Let's go on to the worry. The word worry there means taking so much thought about something that it distracts your attention away from God. So it's your thoughts, and it's almost amassing thoughts again. So you see how each of these kind of build on one another. How are we not to use our thoughts? We are not to rehearse them, store them up so much over and over again. We get this thesaurus of thoughts over and over about the same thing, hoping that the more thesaurus words we get about what's going on, the more possibility we might figure out a way out of this and be able to get our need met. Mm-hmm. So it's the storing up of thoughts that happens when we worry. We store up thoughts over and over again. Remember, we talked about emotion lasting only 90 seconds in your body. It's kind of the same principle is, yeah, we can have a thought of like, oh, what if that happens? But then it's, what do I do with that? Do I start carrying it around? And then I start storing. Oh, I have another word for that. Oh, what about this? Oh, I've got another word. Oh, what about this? And now that need that wasn't even really a need, but I perceived it as a need, has become huge. So huge, my desires weren't met, my public applause, so I made them into a need, and now my needs are so big, I gotta get them fixed right now, right? And that's all now I can think about is my need and me getting them fixed.
Jill, is that how we have, like, we think, I mean, I think this is just maybe American, but, like, plan A, plan B, yes. You know, like, well, I'm going to do this, and it's going to be like this. But if that doesn't work out, I'm still okay, because then
yes.
Plan B, I'm
right.
Going to this.
Yep, exactly. It is, I'm going to have store up all sorts of ways that I can get my need met. The purpose of us having thoughts is to be able to be discovering where God is providing for us. Oh, where's God providing for us here? Oh, where's God providing for us here? Which is why I've asked you when we did the fasting of the food, and now I'll ask you again with the clothing. God says he's going to feed you, that he's the bread of heaven. Where has he been feeding you? But now we get to clothing, and we can ask, how is God clothing you? And I would hope a whole bunch of verses come up. First of all, and says, what does he clothe us with?
His righteousness.
Oh, his ability to allow God to rule. Wow. So I'm supposed to be looking for how he's filling me with the peace to let God rule. But instead, I'm gathering up thoughts of how I can get this need met when my need has already been met with God ruling, mm-hmm. with God being there for me. So that the purpose of my thoughts is to discover what we truly need and that God truly is all we need beyond just the food and the clothing. I think these verses here are very common, but I don't think until we... I do think these are becoming more... will become very alive for us in these 3 weeks. Why are you worrying about your clothing? I mean, every day you go into the closet where you don't have to pick out anything more, why do you worry about your clothing? Why do you worry about... Oh, that outfit doesn't feel quite right. It's a little...
And it's funny that they worried about it 2,000 years ago.
Yes.
I mean, they probably had like 4 or 5 different robes or whatever.
Right, right.
And we have hundreds of our... I mean, I just think it's interesting that that's...
Isn't it?
A
yes.
common part of who man is.
Right, exactly, exactly.
Right, you could have 2 and still worry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and actually, and I actually just read some information on the common person at the time would have had 1 cloak and 1 tunic, which means underwear and an outside thing. That's it. That's all they would have had. And yet, this is a long passage on still worrying about that.
I'd be more worried, yeah. I'd lose that one outfit.
Well, you know, plus the tunic and the cloak, you don't have to worry about the 10 pounds. Go up, go down, you know.
But they're probably worrying too if it's homespun or if it's silk or
sure.
You know, the quality
right.
is
yep.
Yep.
Right.
In that time when you only
right, exactly. Money. Exactly. Yeah, or you know, how do I look in this? I don't look good in this style.
Like
you know? Yeah. You know. So the worrying is not just about do I have enough, but it's all of the details about it. Yes.
Yeah. That we're using it the
yes,
wrong way.
Exactly. Exactly.
God has provided all these things for us, but
right.
instead of saying, this is amazing,
yes.
I have 25 skirts,
right.
whatever,
right.
then we're like, oh, but I probably need one more.
Yes.
I don't have one that's
right.
blue.
Or I'm using
or,
it
yeah.
for the gift of validation.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, oh, she's
yeah.
got good style.
Right.
Whatever.
Exactly. Exactly. So... not only do we look for validation, we also look for our needs to be met. But we define what our needs are.
Right.
Right? We say, look, my desire wasn't met here, so I really need more of this. So my desires then become my needs. And then I can't even separate them between my desires and my needs. Do I really need this? And it gets all the way down to saying, do I really need the food? Because we always go, yeah, but there are people who really need food. Yeah, except that God allowed the Israelites to go without food. And he said, I still am providing for you. So even when it gets down to that, I mean, we don't live there. We have no idea what that's like. But what he says is, what you really need, I want to mold what you really need. I want to mold your desires and I want to mold your needs. You, though, take that from me, and you desire to mold your own needs and decide what those needs are. And what happens then, when I take my desires and they become needs, then they take priority over my life and over my thoughts, and now I've got to get them. They're needs. I have to have them. I've got to have them, and I've got to have them now. So I'll look for the fastest way to be able to get my needs met. And the fastest way almost always is through somebody else. And I'm literally through somebody else. I mean, I want to make sure that I get my needs met. That means everybody else has to cooperate, right? Yes, I'm going to manage everything so that my needs get met. what happens is when I take my desires, they're mine and they're true and they're good and they don't get met and now they become my needs. What happens is I begin to have expectations now and I get to have expectations for everybody in my life. And that means even people I don't know. So for example, I have an expectation that my husband goes to work and that he likes it. He needs to go to work because I need money to get food. And that's a need, right? I got to have food, even though Jesus said, man does not live by bread alone. And he has to like it because I don't want to feel guilty. I don't want to feel guilty that he's going to work so that I have money to get food. So not only do I have expectations for my husband, but expectations for my children, whoever eat with me, I expect them to say, what good meal you've made for me. Because I still have that need for validation and I didn't get it completely, because you'll never get it completely from anybody. No matter how many times somebody said, the food was great, next day you're going, you haven't said anything about the food. Don't you like the food? I have an expectation that somebody will say, I like the food. Then I have an expectation that the store will actually carry exactly what I want. They'll have it fresh and that it'll be a good price. Right? Because if not, I'm going to complain. Yeah. Yeah. On the way to the store, I'm going to expect that the city has made sure that the streets are clear from snow so that I get to the store without being afraid, without, you know, having to be careful. And I'm also going to expect all the drivers that are driving around me, they better be driving exactly how I think they should be driving, because I need to get there fast because I would like to do other things as well besides just go to the grocery store today. So do you see what happens? Is when I choose what my desires are and I choose what my needs are, then I have expectations and all of a sudden the world revolves around me. And my kingdom. I'm building up my kingdom, my needs.
Why would you feel guilty if you didn't like his job?
Because then I'm making him go to something that's terrible every day so that I can get what? Whatever. And I want to be in a good mood. I don't want to have to deal with some crabby man coming home every night, right? Right, right. So, I mean, it can go on. I mean, we could spend all the time doing this. This is what happens is we become to have expectations
all
on people.
I think of is the movie The Jerk.
Take this chair
and this chair back and this chair and that's all I need.
Yes, yes, exactly, exactly. Such a picture of really what we do every day. We do this constantly.
I did it yesterday. I went to the store, and I never go to that store, but it was right there, you know. So this store is here for me. And then I went in there because I needed cilantro, and then they didn't have it. And so then I was,
what?
So then like, I went to the guy, and I was like, do you have cilantro? And he was like, no. And I was like, oh, okay, thanks.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Right. That's exactly. Yes. Yes. How could they not have cilantro?
Yeah, I'm so outraged.
I need cilantro.
I have to go to another store when I was going to get home in enough time to blah, blah, blah.
Yep. Yep.
Kingdoms.
Well, and that's exactly it. That's exactly it. So we have all these little kingdoms. So what Jesus is saying is, look, I'm supplying you with the one thing you need, and that's me. And you're going, yeah, nice, but right now I need cilantro. Let me define your needs, he says. Let me define your needs. Your need is me. And when you allow me to define your need, all of a sudden you're completely filled. Completely filled. I'm giving you already what you need, and you're completely filled. And then you don't have expectations, and you don't have separation, and all of a sudden you're overflowing with connection and invitation to the kingdom. Now, of course, since all of these go one on top of the other, when I have expectations and you're not meeting my expectations, whoever you are, whether the store manager didn't bring the cilantro, whether the city didn't plow the streets, whether the driver in front of me is taking his time about getting through the intersection, then I need you're filling my needs, so I'm going to have to tell you how stupid you are and disconnect from you and say, you are not as good as me. You're just stupid. You are not worth anything today because you got in the way of me getting my needs fulfilled.
And then you're a murderer.
And then I'm a murderer. Exactly. Exactly. And I would go up as length to say, and you made me murder you. Right? Because you were so stupid, because everybody could see, everybody should carry cilantro. Come on. Right? Or everybody should come home happy and accept the gifts that you give. Of course you should do that. Why wouldn't you do that? You didn't fit my picture, and so now you're an idiot, and you're just worthless. And that's called judging. And so he comes into the judging very naturally as we walk down these paths, and he says, do not judge one another. Do not separate them in order to condemn them. Do not measure them according to what you need. You need them to behave. You need them to be the picture-perfect child, the picture-perfect husband. You need them to do that because really it's your desire to have that so that you feel good and comfortable and applauded, that you married the right person and you raised the right children. It all goes back. This is where judging comes from. And so you begin to judge them. And we're really good because we don't often judge out loud, although if we're with our best friends, we do, right? But you know, in a group like this, I'm not going to judge anybody. But in my head, I'm judging all the time, and you know, I'm even sad. I mean, there are times where I walk down the street and go, they really should have painted that door blue. Why did they paint it that color? And I think, I evaluate. Well, I should have done this here or there. I don't even know the people, and I'm evaluating them. Because my need is that it all should fit my picture of what looks pretty or my picture of what would be nice. They should have shoveled their walk today. They're stupid. Why did they do that? Don't they know that they could get sued? But my picture is that I would like a clear walkway. I don't want to slip and fall. So this judging becomes so insipid within our lives that we don't even realize that we're doing it and cutting people off from the kingdom. Because anytime I separate, anytime I judge, anytime I say, you are just not what you should be, and therefore worthless, I'm cutting them off from the kingdom. I'm cutting them off from me, and I'm cutting them off from God as well. And what he says here is, don't judge, don't point out the dust in somebody else's eye. What we do is we come and we say, see, you need to know that you're not right. You need to know that, you shouldn't have done that. Not only do you need to know it, but you need me to point it out for you and show you how to do it right. And show you how to be different. And show you how to be better. Show you how to fit into my picture, really. And it would just be best if you would just do this. When I taught this Sermon on the Mount, this section the first time, Robin, you're probably going to remember this, Jill Ryan was all up in arms because Luke wouldn't write a thank you note.
Yeah.
Do you remember this?
Yeah.
And she could not get past the fact that that was her picture. That she was judging Luke. No, that's just wrong that Luke doesn't write a thank you note. It's just wrong.
Okay, come on. You told me that same story about Christian and thank you notes.
Probably. Yeah, you did. Probably. Exactly. Exactly. Luckily, I didn't have to put that on tape. But yes, we have these pictures. This is how it should be done.
Yeah.
And you're not fitting it. So I'm going to need to tell you, you know, you're not wrong. You're just wrong. We are never called to judge someone, to condemn them, to say, you're not worthwhile. I'm telling you about your worth because of what you've done. Because Jesus said to us, you are a sinner and I love you. You're so worthy. You're so valuable. He never says, you have sinned, so you're not valuable.
Jill, as mothers, isn't it our job to teach social graces, I'll call it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, those can be defined differently.
Yep.
Right? But
so we are to instruct, right? But that doesn't mean we judge their character. They're not a bad person because they didn't do it according to our instruction. When we get to ask, you'll see in the kingdom the openness we're supposed to be giving one another, even when we instruct. So when we instruct, it might look a lot different than what I instruct and I expect you to do it this way. And then all of a sudden they find a different way to do it. And are we okay with that?
So my recent, you don't get X until those thank you notes are written, was probably not so good.
Well, and I think,
well,
like, I think,
okay, as long as you don't. I think the part
it was
of it,
2 months later.
I mean, well, I know, but part of it too is what kind of mother am I that my child doesn't.
Which
have
is pride,
face.
At the root.
Yeah.
Which is
yeah.
the root of it all, right? It's really
yeah.
I need to get some applause that people say, look, she
what
raised her children
boy.
Right. Yes, yes, exactly.
Like, I've noticed that this was causing like great death in our family. The way I was like parenting, like this whole pointing out sort of thing. Pointing out a lot of, you know, my kids had a lot of things I could point out. And so anyway, I went into this mode where this, like, the compassion and being with and blah, blah, blah. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to try to parent from with. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it was so interesting because there was this huge, massive transformation in my kids and their way of engaging me and engaging tasks. And just like with the thank you note, like right now, I think, okay, so Jesus did with, like, this was the whole reimagining Israel. I'm going to live it out. I'm going to do it with. Like, what would it look like for us to be like, okay, we really want to teach you thank you notes. I'm just going with this as a, like, I know it's really hard to set that time aside. Oh, it does stink. I'm going to be with you. I'm going to sit here. I'm going to write this note with you. If you have trouble with some words, I'll help you out with that. Anyway, this is what we're trying, and it's amazing how it's not separating me from my kids as
yep.
much anymore. They don't feel like it's me being the law and them being the fail.
Yep.
But me being like, oh, look at this thing we have to do. Oh,
it's tough.
Let's
yep.
be with you. I don't know. It's
yep.
this thing that I'm like, oh my goodness, I've been parenting for 12 years from a judging, you know
yes.
what I mean? And, it's
and that's exactly what he tells us is, how do we do it then? We look at what, we look at us as, oh, I'm empty too. This is hard for me too. Yeah. Can we do it together? Yeah. And that doing it together, that with connection again. The whole point of the blessings is for us to bless others with connection. It's not that we get our things done. Whatever your picture is, that's not the point of the blessing. It's not for you to get your picture done. In fact, it'll be just the opposite. It's your picture needs to crash and burn. And you get connection out of this. So that's exactly what he does with the judging.
You don't get a lot done this way.
No, and that's exactly right. You're absolutely right. Which I always remind you is, I used to think, well, of course, because God is a God of order, he does everything the fastest and efficiently way. Well, really? I don't think anything he does is efficient.
And his desire for us is rest, not...
Exactly, right, exactly, exactly. He got it all done already, so what are we trying to do?
Mm-hmm. What about judging yourself?
Yeah.
A lot of time.
Yeah, that's so he does talk about that, and all he says is, don't judge your character. Say, I'm empty, and I have a place I can get filled.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only judging that Paul actually talks about, right? Mm-hmm. I don't have to say, you are a bad person. It's, well, I am completely empty. And, of course, that is who I am. I'm empty. But God's here to fill.
And I think we say over and over, like, oh, I'm a bad person. I'm such a sinner. Oh, it must grieve Jesus. Because he's like, oh, my gosh, you know your identity
I know,
as
yes,
a saint.
Yes.
Live into that.
Yes,
and, you know,
yes.
Give me the glory. Don't walk around in
right.
your old ways.
Right, exactly.
I just
exactly.
think it must grieve him. Like,
yes.
No, I died for that.
Yeah,
don't,
yeah.
Don't stand on that.
Yep. I really do want to get to this exercise. So let me zip through asking. We've done ask before. Asking is one of those ones that we spent a long time on because this is one of those that we've always taken out of context. And as soon as we say ask and it will be given to you, who do we think we're talking about?
Oh, God.
Yeah, right? We immediately go, well, that's talking about you asking God something. But that's not the context. The context is relationship with other people.
Mm-hmm.
He ends by saying, oh, yeah, and that could apply to God, too. But he's first talking about other people. So with judging, we dishonor when we judge. With asking, we honor people when we ask, rather than demand. Connection versus separation. So we do this all the time without ever thinking about it. We demand from people. And we might say it nicely, but we will say things like, take out the garbage. You need to move your car. Now, it doesn't sound bad, except here's what's happened underneath. Your car is in the way of my car in the garage, and I need to get out to go do something. Now, what did you just hear? I've just defined a need of mine, right? It's actually a desire, but it's a need, and I need to get out. And the fastest way for me to get my need met is to tell you what to do, right? It sounds innocuous, but I just said, you need to move your car. I've not only defined my need, I've defined your need. You need to get your car. What I did is I separated instead of honoring by saying, hey, you and I are the same. And I would really like to get my car out of the garage. Would you like to come along and help me get the car out of my garage? What that does, a couple things. It honors you by saying your needs, desires are just as important as mine. I don't put mine before yours. I don't say you have to cooperate with me to get my needs met. So I honor them by saying you're just as important as me. I also give them the freedom to be creative in how they want to come alongside me. Not only did I not demand what they do, I didn't demand how they do it. This way I said, you need to do this and you need to get your car out of there. Now, there are perhaps other ways that could have been allowed me to have my desires actually met. And I give them the freedom to say, well, and this has happened sometimes. Well, I can get your car out. No problem. I'll back it out for you. I can get it up. I can twist around. And, you know, my first thought is, let me control my own car. You're gonna not do it right. You're gonna hit something. So all of it, you know, I'm like this. Mm-hmm. But the asking opens up to say, could you come alongside and help me get my car out? Mm-hmm. I give them the freedom to say yes or no. And I give them the freedom to be creative in the way they could do it. So asking people rather than telling people what to do gives them honor as a fellow person, not just as a fellow person, but actually as a family member. As you and I have the same ruler, the same father, and we're working on this together.
Jill, how does, I have three roommates, mm-hmm. and I'm thinking of this scenario, like, all the time.
Uh-huh.
And, like, I think you toe the line of passive-aggressiveness really quickly. Like, hey, can you move your car for me? You know you're blocking. Like, I don't know.
Right, you're right.
I don't know how to do that well.
It's tough. Absolutely stop. So I think the way you do, really how you address it is, I think as roommates, you all sit down together and say, I don't ever want to have to tell you to move your car. I don't want to demand you meet my need. Talk this through. I would like to be living in a place where we're all equal and we all ask. And some of we're going to make mistakes and forget. But how could we do this? How can we come together? So here's what you're doing is you're asking, how can we solve this problem so that
we're not being passive
aggressive? So again, it's always a question. And we don't like this a lot because it takes more time, right? I'm going to have to sit down and ask, how can we do this together? So that it doesn't become about me getting my needs done, right? Because when it's about me getting my needs done, it will be passive aggressive and it will move into aggressiveness. Right? Aggression. And it will be war. It's going to be war. If I don't ask, it's going to be war. Because you have needs and I have needs. And we've both decided what our needs are. And neither of us have really decided that our need mostly is Jesus. And so you have a need to get out and you have a need to keep doing your crossword puzzle.
When you're removing grace completely from it.
Exactly. Completely.
You're talking all about Hebrews.
Right. You're completely moving that. So asking is the way that you relate in the kingdom, which would transform how we live with one another if our first conversations are always asking conversations.
Submitting
to. That's exactly what asking is, right? Asking says, I come as a supplicant. I come as an inferior to superior. I give you honor to say you're important.
And giving up our picture of how it has to be done.
Exactly right.
You're the only way.
Right, yeah, because you're thinking, well, of course she has to move her car. How else will I get out? Oh, you mean somebody else has an idea that you can get out somewhere else? Wow, okay, that's interesting. And like you, Natalie, there could be all different ways that you haven't even thought of that every day you could change. But if I only have my picture and I never ask, I never know that there could be other ways to do it. And this happens all the time in my house. I'm not a good asker. I'm very good at commanding. I'm very good at saying it's got to look this way. And I have a husband who won't tell me anything unless I give him the space. And if I give him the space and ask, he comes up with some ideas that I'm just like, that it would never occur to me to do it that way. And I wouldn't have done it that way. But when I see the results, I realize that was as good, if not better, a way than mine.
I think the other thing, though, is like, allowing your heart again to be open and like communicating what your real need is.
Yes.
Because I think a lot of times we can like put the like superficial need there.
Right.
Do you know
right.
What I mean?
Right.
When like your real need is like, I'm really working on this. I have like anxiety when I'm late to the doctor. And
yes. Yes. Exactly.
Help me with this
yep.
right now. You
yep.
know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I feel like what's hard about this is not even communicating your like the outside need, but like the inside.
Right.
Need.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And asking someone to come into that. Crazy insight.
Which I think, so with Natalie and her roommates, it's when I have a conversation of here's what goes on during the morning mm-hmm. when we're going out, those things start to come out. Mm-hmm. You know, one person doesn't like to be late, but they never say that. And so they just pretend, like, you know, mm-hmm. and they get angrier and angrier. And then they snap about something completely different.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And you don't know where it's coming from. And they're never going to say it because now it's embarrassing that they snapped for something stupid, but they're not going to say, well, I've just been building up anxiety because I was going to be late and I didn't want to ask you. You know, I mean, it gets down to all of that. Mm-hmm. That's why asking conversations bring out more than just telling conversations. We're really good at telling conversations. We're not good at asking conversations.
You know, the flip side of this is when people ask you to do something. What we were talking about earlier,
mm-hmm.
you know, if somebody calls Jill, I need to talk to you about
right.
something. My or Cindy, my response is another day about my time.
Mm.
Where it's really they're honoring
exactly.
you
yes,
wanting
they
to
are.
Talk to you.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So it's definitely a flip side. It's always an honor to be asked something. Because it says they value you.
Right.
If you're being asked, they value you. So that's a huge thing. And if they're asking the way he's saying, they're also giving you the freedom to say no, or creatively, how about if we do it then, or how about if we do it in person, or so you give that freedom. So this is the way we relate in the kingdom. Robin, did you want to say anything?
I just feel like it goes back to the judging too, so much about a lot of times we judge people, we judge their spirituality or judge the depth of their relationship with God, or they don't quite get it or whatever, and then the asking questions is such a beautiful invitation
yes.
to, you know, what do you think about God or whatever.
Right,
you know?
Right, exactly. Yeah, to really connect with
yeah.
them rather than
assume
and then separate. Yes. Yes.
And that I need to
right.
get them on the right
or to assume that what I believe is the correct way,
yes.
and of course, that's the separating. So we get to that wonderful verse about enter the narrow gate. So I want to do this here. Robin, if you would help me with your chair, and Pat, would you help me with that chair? I want those chairs actually turned around and brought into the red ones. So turn them around and put them in the center of the room, but the other way, yeah.
Are you good?
Yeah. Okay. What I want to do is talk about that narrow gate. And really, this whole section, I'm going to admit to you, I hated the homework she gave you on discerning between bad and good people.
I
was just wanting, no, that's not what it says. That discerning there is who to listen to about the way to go. So what Jesus has been doing throughout all of this last two chapters is showing you the blessings of the kingdom and wanting you to say, I'm not going to keep them for myself. I'm not going to attach them for myself. I'm not going to hoard them. I'm going to allow them to overflow. Because what he says is, getting in the kingdom, you come in naked. You don't bring anything with you, right? Because you're poor in spirit. You have nothing to barter with. And yet what we've done is we want to take those blessings he gives us and we want to put them in suitcases and bring them with us, right? Put them in there. So if you've written down fasting, prayer, if you've used any of those for validation, if you've judged, if you've ever judged somebody because they didn't meet your expectations, you know, you might, yeah. if you've ever told somebody rather than asking somebody so that you get your stuff done, I want you to write that down. I want you to put it in the pockets of any of these suitcases. So go ahead and put them in there, just in wherever the pockets are.
Cases full of rocks?
No.
Oh my. See?
What?
Oh, I'm sorry.
So, after you put them in there, realize that all of us carry this baggage around. What Jesus is saying is it doesn't fit into the kingdom. And he says the way to the kingdom is a narrow gate. And that word there actually means a place where there are two obstacles standing side by side so that it won't allow you to bring these things in. Here's an interesting thing. As soon as I read what that meant, my first thought was, okay, since we're always reliving Scripture, we're always reliving, where in Scripture is there a passageway where there are two obstacles standing there?
Well, the Garden of Eden, Israel. Oh. The Garden of Eden gate.
Yeah, what's there?
The angels
with what?
Swords
of fire. So here are our two angels with swords of fire. If I'm going to walk through those and I touch those flaming fires, they're going to catch on fire, right? And if they're attached to me, I'm going to catch on fire. So we've got a lot of fire in Matthew, yeah. And we always think about it as
hell.
But there is a part of Matthew that says, remember we talked about fire in Deuteronomy. It's a good thing. Mm-hmm. It's separating us from all those things. So I want the strongest person in here. Who's my strongest person? Sherilyn.
No, Yolanda.
No, she's got her
Yolanda.
Back.
I haven't heard back.
Oh. That's true. Okay, Yolanda, come on.
Oh, boy.
So I have put in here applause. There's some trophies in there. I've put in there clothing that I think I might, so maybe I should open these up just so that you get this visual.
Okay.
So I have in here, I went to get my trophies and then I didn't want to go in the attic. It was gross. So I have trophies and ribbons.
Okay.
Cheerleading trophies, swimming trophies, obviously not mine. All right.
Would have been yours. Come on.
Where's the cash?
And that one?
Those are, would have been.
Cash.
Bill would have had a fit. Okay, so you're going to carry that with you. But you're also going to need some food. And just in case, all right, and I'm going to be real vulnerable here. I could blame it on Bill, but
sure.
I'm bringing some food with you.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
So this is just in case we run out.
Does it have wheels?
Of the food. So just.
Jars of spaghetti.
Peanut butter.
What?
It is entirely filled with peanut
what?
Butter.
Oh, my goodness.
Entirely filled. And that's normal for us.
TV hoarders don't.
Because
you couldn't get plastic.
Good protein.
Organic only comes in glass. Come on.
Sorry.
All right. Heave ho. And, you know, they might not have plates or anything, so this is a whole picnic thing. So you might need that picnic thing. And then, you know, I thought, man, I'm not going to get too creative here. Clothes, just in case. Because someday I might get cold.
Okay.
Probably not, but you never know. So I'm bringing those. Someday I might need some velvet cruise clothes. So I packed in some velvet clothing.
Okay.
Actually, some sparkly velvet clothing in the bottom there. You never know when those sweaters are going to come back into style. Because you never know. And some shoes.
Do they still have the sticker on?
Obviously, that I still have the sticker on. 40 reduced to 10. So I might need all of that too.
Can you make the gate wider?
And I'm, to tell you the truth, see, I've really pared down, haven't I? I have pared down. All right, there you go.
I've got to carry it, right?
You got to carry it.
Okay.
What he means by the narrow gate is, enter by the narrow gate, because it's going to shave off everything that you can't bring in. Go ahead, try.
Oh, she's on fire.
Oh, yeah, see, she's on fire, right? Look at that. And she's moving the angels. Okay, so this is what we are trying to do when we try to take in all of these blessings and keep them for ourselves. He says, don't go down the wide path. The wide path is for all those people who are bringing all their baggage. And everybody's bringing their cruise liners along with them. From there, he goes to the false prophets. Because the false prophets, what are they bringing with them? What does it say about the false prophets there? What is it? What? How do they first describe them? They're bringing their costumes. They're wearing extra clothes. They have costume over their other costumes. And they're saying, this is why they're false prophets, and this is why it means here, discern what they're saying. They're saying, in order to get in the kingdom, you need to bring some clothes. You need to bring things that make you look good, right? That's what sheep's clothing are for wolves. They make them look good and acceptable. They make them look like they belong into the kingdom. So false prophets say, you need to bring stuff into the kingdom. You need to bring good deeds into the kingdom. You need to bring cool costumes into the kingdom. This is why you need to discern not whether false prophets are good or bad, because he just told us, don't judge. What you need to know is, what are they saying? This is why it talks about false prophets rather than saying these people, because prophets are people who speak and say, come to the kingdom. You need to know, are they saying, come to the kingdom with all your baggage? Bring as much as you can. Bring the coolest costume you have. Those are people that you are not to listen to. You're not to listen to their message. Because this whole section is, who are you listening to? The message of false prophets that say, you do need some stuff to bring into the kingdom. Or Jesus, who says, listen to my words. Because when you listen to my words and you take me in, what happens is, as you are building a house on a rock, when you take in my words. Because you take in my words of you're empty and I'm going to fill you, and you get filled and it comes overflows, and all of a sudden your overflowing goes to other people who connect and come to God, and because of that, you're building a house. You're multiplying. You're a disciple making disciples. And you're building a house on a rock. When they see this talk about house on a rock, we kind of take it out of Israel, right? Bring it back in Israel. What house did they know that was actually built from literally part of the building is part of the bedrock? What building do they know? The temple. So if you go there, some of the building on the north east, northwest corner is actually bedrock. And they have carved it to make it look like the same stone as everything else, but it's actually the bedrock. That's actually part of it. That's God's house. So when they see build a house on a rock, this is what they think. Oh, we're rebuilding it. We're rebuilding a new temple. How are we doing it? By listening to his words, they taking in the blessing and allowing them to overflow to blessings to others. This is how we build God's house. This is how we rebuild it. Mm-hmm. By allowing his blessings to overflow into blessings to others. By not hoarding and keeping them for ourselves. By not trying to get applause for them. By not trying to store them up to meet our needs. But allowing them to flow out. And there we multiply. We connect others with God and with ourselves. We begin to build the kingdom on his words, on his rock. So, if God then is restoring his will rather than my will here, so he's restoring my desires for the desire to be connected. He's restoring my need for the need for him alone. And he's restoring my will. For his house to be built, not my house. Not my kingdom, not my cruise liner that I'm trying, that I need all this baggage for to furnish, but his will to build his house on the rock. So that when I let him define my desires, when I let him define my needs, when I let him to define the will, that fills me with the ability to take the blessings and allow them to flow out to others and be a blessing and therefore become fruitful and multiply. Disciples, making disciples, which is exactly how he ends his whole gospel. Is so now that I've taught you what it looks like, go and do it. Mm-hmm. So, Father, thank you for the richness of your word, for the visuals that you give us to see that our baggage only will catch on fire if we're trying to bring it into the kingdom. Father, I pray that we would let down the baggage, that we would allow the blessings to be blessings, that we would be priests who take in what you have given us so that we can connect others to ourselves and to you and be enriched and enjoy being able to be in community under our Father. In Jesus' name, amen.